So today I'm talking about the Valley of the Dry Bones from Ezekiel 37. And that photo that's up on the screen right now is, well, that's me taking weight loss drugs. But I don't know, I just thought it would fit. So in the 80s, when I did youth groups quite a bit, we quite often started those out by asking the high school students, what are some of your highs and lows? And it was amazing what they would tell you. They'd tell you things that if their parents knew about it, it would have been really interesting. But they would always start out with that, you know, and it was kind of fun to walk through that with a group of a dozen or so kids. And I always told them, I said, you know, I think I've had way more lows in my life than I've had highs. And I think that's normal for everyone, that the lowest points in your life, well, that's what normal is. And when there's a good day, it's just a gift. But today I want you to think about some of the lowest points in your lives, some of the worst times. You know, for me, it was pretty much my whole childhood. I enjoyed the farm work, but I just didn't get along with the farmers. And I left 3 weeks after I turned 18. Now, I've had lots of low points since. Went through a messy divorce in the 80s, and things didn't always go well as a pastor. I thought to quit many times. And then, you know, through the recession and through COVID, it was just seemed like it was an impossible task. This is what I've learned, is that at my lowest points, God has always shown up. He's given me hope when I felt most hopeless. He's given me energy when I felt most tired. And he sent people to encourage me when I needed encouragement. I can clearly identify with Psalm 40, verse 2. It says, he lifted me out of the pit of despair, out of the mud and the mire. He set my feet on solid ground and steadied me as I walk along. Now, we all have bad times. And I think bad times are normal. That's the default condition of life. The good times are gifts that happen sometimes. Sometimes we go through these times of despair, but it seems there is no hope for the future. I found this online this week. It says, despair, it's always darkest just before it goes pitch black. And I think that happens to a lot of us. Think of your worst time. Maybe it was years ago. Maybe you're going through it right now, but it's a time where it feels like God's not going to help. You know, the approaching holidays can really trigger. We had a double whammy this week. We had short days, cloudy days, and a full moon. So everything was a little goofy this week. Advent, you know, this time of year is always the darkest season. It's when the days are the shortest. It's a time where we need to have a message of hope. And Jesus brings hope to the most despairing situations that we go through. Now, today we're going to look at the Israelites in exile again. This is writing by the prophet Ezekiel. And what happens is he's looking over this battlefield that had never been cleaned up since the last battle. So there's skeletons of soldiers all over this battlefield. And he's looking at these exposed skeletons of the Israeli army. And he was in a state of despair himself. Now, here's how the story goes. And I just think it's a really cool story. The Lord took hold of me, and I was carried away by the Spirit of the Lord to a valley filled with bones. Now, that's how the Old Testament prophets introduced their vision, that, yeah, the Lord took hold of me, I was carried away, that sort of thing. It's a common way that God spoke to the ancient prophets. He led me around, all around, among the bones that covered the valley floor. They were scattered everywhere across the ground and were completely dried out. Then he asked me, son of man, can these bones become a living people again? You know, can the dead come to life? Is there any hope for the souls that formerly inhabited these bones? And Ezekiel's reply is, "Oh, sovereign Lord," I replied, "you alone know the answer to that." And notice that he didn't rule out the possibility that they'd come back to life. But did he think it would happen? Would you and I have thought it could happen if we were in that situation? Then he said to me, "Speak a prophetic message to these bones and say, 'Dry bones, listen to the word of the Lord. This is what the sovereign Lord says. Look, I'm going to put breath into you and make you live again. I'll put flesh and muscles on you and cover you with skin. I'll put breath into you and you will come to life. Then you will know that I am the Lord.'" I like the way he says this. Listen to the word of the Lord, because in the mind of the Hebrew people, God's spoken word was the source of life. The word created life. And the word gives life. The word gives life after death, as symbolized here. And of course, Jesus is referred to as the word in the New Testament. His point here is that these old dry bones can come back to life. So I spoke this message just as he told me. Suddenly, as I spoke, there was a rattling noise all across the valley. The bones of each body came together and attached themselves as complete skeletons. Then as I watched, muscles and flesh formed over the bones. Then skin formed to cover their bodies, but they still had no breath in them. Now imagine this scene. Bones moving to become skeletons, you know, complete skeletons. Then muscles and flesh forming over them. I often have wondered how that might have looked, you know. Was their digestive system put in first and then the muscles? Or how did that all come together? It had to be quite a spectacle. Now, I was asked one time to lead a chapel, well, actually I was asked several times to lead a chapel service at the New Holland Christian School in South Dakota. This is a private school, and these kids do not want to go to chapel. It's hard fact, they didn't want to be there. I said, "Look, it's an hour where your teachers aren't going to have, so you just have to put up with me." But they did not want to be there, and they let me know that. They gave me this passage to use, so I did. But what I did was, I could tell that these kids did not want to hear me talk the whole time. So I said, "We're going to act out the passage today." The chapel was in the gym, so I said, "Why don't you kids come off those bleachers and everybody lay on the floor, pretending you're dead bones." I said, "That's not going to be that much of a stretch. I preach to your parents. I'm used to preaching to dead bones." All right. So they all laid down on the floor. It was kind of interesting. As I read through the passage, I said, "Start rattling." And of course, they did it. And they started pairing off, a few of them, like high school people do. But all of a sudden, they were quite interested in the passage. And they were a little rowdy. But, you know, they did act the passage out. However, I was never asked back to do a chapel after that. The lesson is that God can make life happen whenever he wills. And he wants to do that for you and me. Then he said to me, "Speak a prophetic message to the winds, son of man. Speak a prophetic message and say, 'This is what the sovereign Lord says. Come, O breath from the four winds. Breathe into these dead bodies so that they may live again.'" The cool part here is that the word for breath in Hebrew is the same word as the word for wind and spirit. And that word is ruach. It's fun to say if you have allergies. It clears things up. Ruach. What he's saying here is that the souls of these soldiers were re-entering their bodies. This whole story is a metaphor for hope re-entering our souls. If God can do this, he can certainly get you through whatever it is you're going through. So I spoke the message as he commanded me, and breath came into their bodies. They all came to life and stood up on their feet, a great army. Now just imagine yourself seeing this. It would have freaked me out a little bit. I don't know about you. That would be something that not be easy to forget. Then he said to me, "Son of man, these bones represent the people of Israel. They are saying we've become old, dry bones. All hope is gone. Our nation is finished." Yeah, they were at a low point where all hope was gone. But there'd be more low points. Just think about these people. What low points they would have to face in the future. These were the ancestors of the Jews in Hitler's concentration camps, just in our lifetime. Now, somebody reminded me before the service that today is the 84th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. And, you know, we think of that. Now, 84 years seems like a long time if you're like Henry's age. 84 years seems like a long time to you, doesn't it? But somebody like me, that's just a blink. That was 84 years ago that the descendants of these people were being herded into concentration camps. So they had more low points coming. You can imagine the feeling of hopelessness. But hopelessness is a part of life, and we all go through it. So this story has much to say to our situations too. There's always hope, because God is at work trying to make things better. Therefore, prophesy to them and say, "This is what the sovereign Lord says. O my people, I will open your graves of exile and cause you to rise again. Then I will bring you back to the land of Israel. When this happens, O my people, you will know that I am the Lord." So he's saying things are going to get better. Then you'll know I'm with you and that I am the Lord. And then he says this, "I will put my spirit in you, and you will live again and return to your own land. Then you will know that I, the Lord, have spoken, and I have done what I said." Yes, the Lord has spoken. He says he's going to put his spirit in you. And where the spirit of the Lord is, there is hope. It's nearly impossible to be enveloped in despair when you have the spirit of the Lord within you. The point of this is that dark times happen to everybody. They're going to happen to any of us that are breathing. We're going to see more dark times. But we can find hope in those dark times. There's a story from the Gospel of John, chapter 11, where the brother of Mary and Martha had died. They were personal friends of Jesus. And Jesus arrived 4 days after the death of their brother, whose name was Lazarus. Now, the Jewish belief at that time was that the soul hovered above the body for 3 days before it departed. So by Jesus showing up on the fourth day, just meant that this guy was really dead. They wanted to be certain of his death, I think, for the story. But despair was hanging over those people like a dark cloud. At the house, Jesus has a dialogue with Martha, and this is what he says. Jesus told her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live, even after dying. Everyone who lives in me and believes in me will never, ever die. Do you believe this, Martha?" Well, she believed him. Even in death, there's an incredible hope. Jesus came, you know, to remedy death. Death was not his idea. That wasn't part of the original plan. Death is the wages of sin. We're all born sinners. We all have to die because God doesn't mess with free will. But this event of death angered Jesus. And I've always found that to be fascinating, the way this next verse is worded. When Jesus saw her weeping and saw the other people wailing with her, a deep anger welled up within him, and he was deeply troubled. Now, folks, you have to understand this. Jesus is God, and Jesus gets ticked off at human suffering. I think that's great. Now, he won't mess with free will, and he'll let us inflict pain on ourselves, but he's angry about human suffering. He won't mess with our free will, but if we want, he will deliver us from eternal death. And then at this point in this narrative, one of the most important verses of the Bible happens. It's also the shortest verse of the Bible. It says, then Jesus wept. That means that he feels your pain and he does something about it. He gives hope. He raised Lazarus from the grave as a forecast for what he wants to do for you and me. I always felt sorry for Lazarus. He had to die a second time. Most of us only get stuck with having to do that once. This poor guy had to do it twice. The Pharisees wanted to kill him because he was telling people about Jesus. We die once. And if we trust Jesus to save us, we get a new and repaired body that lasts forever. And that is the ultimate hope. Advent feels like the darkest time of the year. Short days, and they're getting shorter. Sometimes you get lots of snow. And Advent is a time when Hollanders get really depressed because they have to go Christmas shopping and spend money. So that's not a good thing. Now, no one knows the exact date that Jesus was born. They didn't send out birth announcements in those days. In the back of our minds, we picture it as December 25. But we can only guess when he was really born. The early Christians decided to designate December 25 to remember his birthday, partly because there was a sun festival that took place there on the 25th, but partly because, well, December 25 is the day that we can visibly notice the days starting to get longer, starting to be more light. That's the day we start to notice that. The days are getting longer. Now, I'll take you down a little cul-de-sac here. Just think about that. December 25, back in Jesus' day, people were observing that the days started to get longer. And many, many, many years before that, many years after that, you can predict what's going to happen on December 25, the sunrise, 80 years from now, because it's that regular. Now, I ask you, and I ask this whenever I get in a good old argument with an atheist, which I must admit I enjoy more than I should, I always say that kind of precise timing of the universe. Do you think for a minute that's an accident? How can that possibly happen? You know, if you don't believe in God, watch the sunrise. How can that possibly happen? So, anyway, just wanted to go down that cul-de-sac. We're coming back now. This is symbolic, this whole passage, of the fact that Jesus brings light to our times of despair. You know, if you're going through the dark days right now, and some of you are, hold on. Because with God's help, you could push through. It's a little bit of a dad brag here, but you know, my daughter's now an accomplished marathon runner. She's going to do London in April, and she's getting married in May, so that's going to be a trick. But you know what running a marathon's like, if you've ever run one. Now, I have, and the first watt mile is always the hardest for me. That's when everything aches on me. Just not pleasant. But you get about mile and a half in, you just kind of get in the groove. You just can keep going. But by the time you get to mile 25, you look behind you and something's dragging. That's your own rear end. You know, it's just really hard to do. Get to mile 25, and more than once I said, this is insane, I'm quitting. But then you see the finish line. And hope is restored. So your hope, no matter how tough things look, can be restored. And that needs to be the message of Christmas. Life has lots of ups and downs, and it seems like there's more downs than there are ups. But we're given a choice of how to respond to the down times. We can live in despair, or we can live in hope. It's our choice. The promise of Jesus is no less valid today than the day he said it to Martha. He is the resurrection and the life. We need to trust him to save us. We need to trust him to give us hope. And we need to believe this good news and live in peace. Shortly after this raising of Lazarus, Jesus was meeting in a room with his disciples, with his students. And it was a very dark time for him because he knew that within hours he would be hanging on a cross. So he called his students together and they shared a meal. They shared the Passover meal. And at that Passover meal, before they started to bring out the food, Jesus washed their feet as a symbol of what we're to be doing, taking care of folks. And then he put his robe back on and he served them the supper. But at that meal, he took the bread at the end of the meal and he broke it. And he said, "This is my body, which is broken for you. From now on, as often as you eat of this, do so in remembrance of me." In the same way, the custom was to have a dessert cup, and the host would fill the cup like, much like this, and then he would bless the cup, which Jesus did. And then he showed it to his disciples, and he says, "This cup represents the new covenant in my blood. As often as you partake of it, do so in remembrance of me." Let's pray together, shall we? Lord, we understand that you have paid the ransom for us. Undeserving as we are, that you've done it. And now we ask that as we partake of this sacrament, that it becomes an important stepping stone in the faith of all of us. So we consecrate this to you. Amen.